game is on. I think it's a foot.
On. On a foot.
The game is on a foot. No. Hey guys, welcome to the Infamous Podcast. What's going on, Johnny?
Not much.
Hey, happy...
I should have said that like Benedict Cumberbatch.
Do
it. The game is on.
He's a little more like guttural and deep than that, but...
Yeah, it's kind of like
his voice is pretty awesome. Anyway, hey, this is the 25th episode of the Infamous Podcast.
Wow. Congratulations.
We're at the quarter century mark.
Not my 25th episode, but your 25th episode.
Insert firework sounds now.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm not actually going to do that.
That would be awesome.
It's cheesy and lame.
Somebody with their ears would be like, I got!
Anyway, hey, so we're back after New Year's. This is our, technically our first time recording in 2016.
Yeah, wow.
So it seems like it's been forever since we recorded last.
When did we record? We recorded last Thursday,
ago.
Right?
It was a week ago, and it just like this week has like flown by, or not flown by, just dragged on. Anyway, so
I don't remember what happened since last Thursday.
Well, I froze you in carbonite.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And that, no, I'm kidding.
Well, I was wondering why I was had all these writings all over me and that.
Okay, Jane Doe. John Doe, Jane Doe, whatever. Okay, so we're going to catch up on some things that we missed with all the Star Wars coverage that we've done for the last few weeks and our best of and our looking forward to.
I thought we were on a Star Wars podcast.
No, it's not a Star Wars podcast anymore. It was. So you said we were a Walking Dead podcast for a long time, and then we were a Star Wars podcast.
And we just throw superheroes in there?
We just randomly throw in superheroes.
Yeah.
Now, this week we are going to catch up on a couple of things that we missed. The Doctor Who Christmas special.
I don't really think we missed it.
Well, just we missed talking about. Not that we missed watching. And Sherlock the Abominable Bride.
Yeah.
Which is actually really hard for me to say.
Say
Abominable Bride.
The Abominable Bride.
Yeah, I have to think about it before I say it. And then we're going to talk
about... How do you go with the Abominable Snowman?
Abominable Snowman? I put a B in and then we're going to talk a little bit about 2016 being the 50th anniversary of Star Trek.
Yeah.
And share our plans for how we're going to celebrate one of our, both of one of our favorite properties. And, you know, that was pretty influential on both of us growing up.
Yeah. Yeah.
That makes sense?
Yeah.
Cool.
I think it was. Thinking back, yeah. It's not been with me since, you know, Star Wars has been with me pretty much since I was 2 or 3 years old.
Yeah, I mean, Star Wars for me came out a couple months before I was born.
Right.
So
it's been pretty much your whole life.
It's my whole life. Just real quick, Star Trek for me, really, I mean, like, I remember watching the original series as a kid, kind of in reruns every now and then.
Yeah, yeah.
But for me, it really started with The Next Generation, because... In the 80s.
Right.
You know, I mean, I remember for me, that was Friday evening appointment viewing. And I remember one time we went up to Detroit for vacation and we were driving while it was on. And, you know, we were going to visit my uncle and he forgot to tape it.
Oh.
And I had like a meltdown.
Oh, so, no. How old were you? I mean, 89. Was the first season?
Like 7th or 8th grade, something like that. But you know, like old enough to be like nerdy enough to like be pissed about
You're
something.
Freaked
like
out
that.
About it.
Yeah, and I still don't think I've ever seen that episode.
Do you remember what episode it was?
I think it was like maybe 10
these
episodes.
Are all available on Netflix. Now,
I think
right?
it was like maybe the 10th episode of the first season.
What was the 10th episode of the first season? Probably a really bad one.
I don't know. It's really hard to go back and watch that stuff.
Like, the first 2 seasons.
Yeah, it's borderline unwatchable.
Did you, well, you know, since we're talking about it, we may as well talk about it. Did you watch the behind-the-scenes thing on Netflix? I think it's Chaos on the Bridge is what it's called.
No.
It's about the first 2 seasons of The Next Generation.
Okay.
And it really delves deep in a lot of the backroom politics that were going on that show.
Oh.
And I respect the first 2 seasons a little bit more after that.
Very, very interesting. Yeah, I'll have to check that out. It's my cue.
It was Shatner, because Shatner's done the Captain's special, the documentaries, and he did this.
Oh, cool.
So it's him interviewing people and getting, you know, because obviously he has the experience of knowing what it was like to be on that show.
And dealing with Gene
Roddenberry. And that's what it literally is like. How everybody was dealing with Gene in his later years, creating a new Star Trek, and, you know, what happened.
Yeah.
Oh. And so there's, you know, Patrick Stewart shows up at some point, Jonathan Frakes shows up at a certain point, but a lot of the background people.
Oh, cool.
And you find out a lot of stuff that, like, is like, you're like, wow, okay. That makes sense of why, like, the second season with the writer's strike and coming back from the writer's strike, it makes a lot more sense of why some of those episodes were pretty much turds.
Yeah, like, when I go back and watch, I pretty much start with the Locutus of Borg arc.
So, do you even watch the third season? Like, the third season had some of the best gems in it.
Like, I watched the one where...
And we're talking about Next Generation, yeah, but, you know,
I think
Trek is what's celebrating.
Tasha Yar dies in the third season.
Oh, Yesterday's Enterprise when she comes back.
No, the one where she dies in the...
Oh, that's in the first season.
Isn't the first... She dies in the first season.
She dies in the first season.
No, so when she comes back,
was more like background
part
drama.
Romulan thing.
That was fourth season. Okay. That was the end of fourth season.
I don't know. I just typically just start where he gets turned into a Borg and go from
there.
Okay, anyway.
I you know, there's in the first two seasons of The Next Generation, there's gems and turds is what I call it. And that third season,
are there turded gems?
There's turded gems too, because there's stuff where there's good parts of an episode, but the episode on the whole was terrible. But, like, when the third season, I think, like, Gene had gotten really sick and wasn't a full-time producer on the show. It was Ira Stephen Bear. It was Ron Moore.
Okay.
It was, you know, like, Rick Berman had pretty much taken over control of the show. So, Brandon Braga, Ron Moore, you know, all the guys who went on to create their own series that were, you know, awesome. Rick Berman was running it day to day.
Yeah.
And Roddenberry was coming in.
Okay.
And Roddenberry, I want to say beginning, like, they were in production of season four. He passed away.
Yeah.
And so season three picked it up, you know, picked up storylines.
Sure.
I mean, you know, like I said, turded gems. there was the episode in season two with Kalar, Worf's, like, girlfriend, pretty much.
Right, I remember that.
And they continued that in the third season and the fourth season with the whole Klingon story. Mm-hmm. Like, they really, I think they realized that they had characters that had a lot of backstory, and they didn't, you know, it was the thing, like, if Star Trek would have went on for probably two more years, they would have went into the backstory of characters more.
Okay.
And I mean, you know, obviously... Our plans are to review.
Yeah, I mean, we'll just share our plans now. We'll just
we're going to review a Star Trek movie a month.
Yep.
So, like, I don't want to go into background story on characters, because in the original Trek movies, there's a lot of background story.
Yeah.
That
I'm gonna have
probably
to
would have been.
I'm
going to
have to rewatch a lot of these movies too, which will be fun.
You should rewatch them right before do that.
But now, like, what was it? Nemesis. I think I've only seen once.
It's on Netflix right now.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. But I watched it the other night, actually.
You want to do reverse chronological?
Yeah, so we're going to do Into Darkness first, and the motion picture in December.
Okay.
So it's going to be probably not one of the best, and not one of the best.
We're going to bookend it with the turds.
Yeah, well, you know. Yeah.
No, you know what? We rewatched Into Darkness last weekend.
Yeah.
It's not that bad.
That's the thing, and the motion picture is the same way. The motion picture is not... You know, you have to look at a movie from the time that it was made.
Yeah.
And motion picture came out around the time of Star Trek or Star Wars and Black Hole and a lot of those movies, 2001.
Right.
So there's a lot of just plodding along in that movie.
You mean like most 70s sci-fi?
Yeah, kind of, yeah. Yeah.
Star Wars being the exception. The
Andromeda Strain, I mean, you know, yeah.
But, I mean, it'll be fun to talk about.
And obviously, in September, we'll talk about Star Trek, the original series. We'll do, you know, probably pick some of our favorite episodes in that. You know, it'll get mentioned throughout the year, I'm sure, because there will be stuff. They'll be doing stuff throughout the year.
I would like to talk about the other series, not just the original, but...
I think, you know, in September, we might just do a few episodes of Star Trek. That's a warning. If you don't like Star Trek, you don't have to listen in September.
No, you absolutely have to listen in September. I'm kidding.
Well, will that be your anniversary month, too, won't it? Did you start in September?
August, July.
Was it August or July?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Whatever, 25 weeks ago.
I don't have that kind of eidetic mind going on what? Here.
Come on, Rain Man. Get it on.
Yeah. Anyway. Definitely. Yeah.
All right. So that's what we're going to do for Star Trek this year. We're both really excited about this. We're excited that, you know.
So about 2 weeks we'll do 50th. Into Darkness.
When are we going to do Beyond? Will we just do that when it comes
we'll,
out?
We'll do Beyond as a bonus episode. Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah. Obviously, there's going to be a lot of movies coming out this year. Well, we'll probably do like we did with Star Wars. But we'll do a bonus episode. So you can listen to the regular episode and just listen to us BS about whatever.
Yeah, and if there's a movie you want us to review yeah. as a bonus episode, email us at theinfamouspodcast@gmail.com so we can kind of plan for that.
We'll definitely be reviewing Deadpool. We'll definitely review Deadpool. Captain America Civil War. We'll definitely review X-Men Apocalypse.
Yeah.
It'll probably be like one a month.
Yeah, I'd like to review Independence Day 4.
Yeah.
So, or two. ID42.
ID42. I'm so confused.
Too many numbers.
Yeah, too many numbers.
Anyway, but, no, it's, I mean, we talked about this last week. There's, yeah. I mean, 2015 was a great year.
Yeah.
2016 could be even better.
It's going to be jam-packed full of stuff. I mean, you know.
It'll be interesting to see what, like, the surprises are. Because, like, Mad Max was a surprise.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You know.
I mean, you know, obviously, I being a fan of Mad Max, you know,
myself,
you know, I didn't know that you yeah. were a fan, but you know, I was a fan of the originals, you know, I always watch them. There are those type of movies where even if it's halfway through the movie, I'll still stop and watch it.
Yeah.
Going well, yeah, in, I kind of knew, you know,
mm-hmm.
it's going to be at least decent, but it's like, it knocked it out of the park for me.
Well, yeah. And like, I mean,
probably my favorite Mad Max movie at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm Road Warrior being a close second, saying like the Tina Turner Thunderdome. So,
well, yeah,
like,
sure.
Just belt out, you know.
That was one of my first vinyl albums.
Nice. You know yeah. what my first vinyl album was? It was a 45.
Oh, okay.
It was the Greatest American Hero theme song.
There you go. There so, you go. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have that somewhere too, but I can remember one Christmas. I just got a show ripe
for a reboot. By yeah. the way.
Yeah.
So.
I got in a record player for Christmas mm-hmm. 1 year, and my first two albums were Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome and nice. Back to the Future.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Those were my very two, and I blared those things.
Was there a bunch of Huey Lewis on that?
There's two.
Okay.
Two Huey Lewis. Eric Clapton's on there.
Okay.
Yeah, it's really a weird...
I don't think I've ever listened to the Back yeah. to the Future soundtrack.
Yeah, it's a, and there's, like, I think it only has one cut of Alan Silvestri music on it. Like weird. The last track yeah. is in Allison, but I mean, it has the Power of Love,
yeah,
and it has Back in Time, so obviously it's got the two Huey yeah. Lewis. But like, there's an Eric Clapton song that you actually hear in the movie, but like, it's the alarm when the alarm clock goes off before yeah, he yeah. goes to the mall, and it's an Eric Clapton song,
yeah.
Earth Angels on there, and that. So, you know, obviously, this is something you can look up, and I'm just babbling,
that's
but,
okay,
you know,
we're filling time,
yeah.
We're 13 minutes in.
Shame on us. Shame on us.
We haven't talked all week.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah. It's been a busy week.
It's just been.
Oh, yeah. It has been.
Lots of stuff happening.
As I rub my face.
In Brian and Johnny's lives. All right. So do you want to talk?
I think it was just decompressing from the holidays.
That too.
You know, obviously I work in a retail job, so I'm talking to people all the time. And it's like, yeah, I haven't talked to anybody.
Well, I've become a hermit and I've been trying to get out more. So.
True.
I actually left the house today.
Ooh.
All right. Do we want to talk Doctor Who or Sherlock first?
Well, first, like, I see the Doctor show.
Oh. Anyway.
Either one. Whatever you want to do.
Well, let's go with Doctor Who.
All right. We'll go with Doctor Who.
I just want to get it out of the way.
Yeah. Why?
I wasn't a huge fan of this Christmas special.
Really?
Now, and I'll say this.
And you have the opposite opinion of me.
I have. Well, I'm not a big fan of the River Song character.
Yeah, that's true. You've said that
before. I feel like she comes into the show and tends to just derail things.
She's a MacGuffin. She's like a big MacGuffin.
She's a big fat. Yeah. Like, not, you know, she's not fat.
Not the
like,
actress, you know, but the,
yeah. Yeah, she's a big fat MacGuffin.
Yeah.
What's her name? Elizabeth Kingston?
No, Alex
Kingston. Alex Kingston. Yeah. No, she's hot. I remember her on ER.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say ER.
I had a huge crush on her when she was on
when
ER.
When she got cast on this, I was like, oh, yeah, I remember her.
And it's funny because I really do like the actress.
Yeah.
I just think the character is very poorly conceived.
Well, and it's done now. This was the end of her story, figuratively. The end of her story was The Forest of Trees, you know, with David Tennant. But this is like the end of that story because the next story will be that story. Mm-hmm. And that, you know, which was cool. I'm glad that they did it. Nice. I'm glad that they ended her story.
I just feel like Capaldi has turned into this really interesting mix of Doctor.
Yeah.
And not of Doctors, just of Doctor. Because there's a little bit of the warrior in him. There's like a little bit of the poet.
Yeah.
There's, you know, the Doctor that I want to heal.
And the Doctor, and in this episode you see the Doctor the Romantic.
Yeah.
I thought it was so funny watching it. You genuinely see him smile.
Yeah.
And like this is the first time I think he's actually had a genuine smile on his face
He
sees her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, when he sees her in general.
When she pulls her hood back and it's her and he just cracks a grin and it's like Capaldi hasn't really like shown that much emotion.
No, he's not a smiley, happy
doctor. Right, yeah. So. And this episode, he is kind of that happy doctor again.
Mm-hmm. So what I liked that robot that kept switching heads.
Oh, the, what was it? The King's?
Yeah.
Was Hydroflax.
Yeah. That was cool.
Yeah.
I liked that when they had the head in the bag in the TARDIS and the Hydroflax body outside of the TARDIS, they couldn't go anywhere.
Take off. Yeah.
That was really cool.
Yeah.
Other than that, like, I liked Capaldi, but I felt like it was very much a baby in the corner kind of thing.
Yeah.
They just kind of, I don't know, I just feel like he was under, and this just might be me and my bias.
Right.
But it just felt like
Song episode.
Yeah, it felt like he was underutilized, where like, if this was her last time on,
right,
I would have liked to see more of an adventure.
Yeah, and it was more just fast-paced jumping the different places.
It was like watching a YouTube video with all the jump cuts.
Yeah.
You know how, like, you know, it'll be like, hey, I'm, you know, how, like, they do the fast-talking jump cuts.
Like, we're here. We're there. We're here. Yeah, we're going there.
It just felt like it hopped.
Until they got onto the ship.
Right.
And then it was the whole make the deal for the diamond that was in Hydroflax's head.
Right.
While the robot's trying to get him. And then finally decides that, you know, he's no use to...
Right. Yeah, I don't
because he's dying. I mean, he was dying anyways because he had
that... I don't need that head anymore.
Yeah, so that part was cool because of the fact that the guy that Riversong was working with, the fish guy, Fleming, pretty much sold them out and said, told the robot, well, you can get the best head in the universe because the Doctor's going to show up at some point. No, nobody knowing that the Doctor's there the whole time. River didn't recognize him because she had never seen him before.
And she had never seen that variation.
I think she started catching on to it. But, like, you know, he eventually just says, hello, sweetie. And she realizes, you know,
now,
it's him.
She gave Matt Smith's Doctor regenerations, right?
No.
Like, additional?
No, that was actually the Time Lords.
Oh, the Time Lords.
Yeah, okay. And that Christmas special.
Oh, that's been, what, that was 2 years ago.
2 years ago, yeah.
See, I didn't like that one much either, and I only watched it once.
The Christmas specials are hit and miss, I think, sometimes. It's like, you know, I didn't like last year's.
Yeah.
And I really didn't like the year before that.
See, I think
with the one where Matt Smith turned into Peter Capaldi was, there was so much hype that year, and they did that Doctor Who special where it was the three Doctors.
Yeah, with the
and
War
I think
Doctor.
That should have been the Christmas special.
Yeah.
And let just, you know, he could have turned at the end of that, and it would have been fine. But, I mean, you know, like I said, they're hit or miss. This one was, obviously, like, all the Christmas specials are written by Stephen Moffat. Moffat created River Song.
Right.
So that's, you know, a lot of the River Song is because of Moffat. Good way to end it.
Yeah.
Really good way.
I mean, it was a good way.
Well, he had been avoiding taking her to this planet. Mm-hmm. Like, he kept telling her about this planet. You know, let me look. Darrelium.
Yeah.
Darrelium to see the Singing Towers, which he had kept telling her about. And, you know, obviously the Doctor knew about taking her there because she told him.
Right. Spoilers.
In the, exactly. Spoilers. But, like, in the library, she had told him that.
Mm-hmm.
And then she dies. I mean, obviously. And he wanted to avoid that because he knew that was the last time that he would see her.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the best part of the episode.
Yeah.
The best part of the episode was her waking up because the ship they're on crashes on Darrelium.
Mm-hmm.
The Doctor is okay. She gets knocked out.
Mm-hmm.
He goes out of the TARDIS. A guy comes running up like, are you okay? Blah, blah, blah. The Doctor gives him the diamond, says, hey, why don't you build a restaurant right here?
Right.
And, you know, then the Doctor jumps ahead 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
The restaurant's been built. You know, it's a popular restaurant.
Yeah, because it's her last day.
Yeah.
Which, and I mean, it was sweet. It was very sweet.
So he makes reservations and then has to jump ahead another 2 years because the reservations are 2 years out.
Right.
The robot with the two heads, one being her other husband,
right,
is working there because they were the only, like, real survivors that were found in the ship. And everything, I mean, Moffat really ties it together and closes it down because he gives her the sonic screwdriver she said that she got from him. And the doctor cries.
Yeah.
Because she told him, the last time I seen you, you cried.
Yeah.
And that. But she didn't tell him, like, you look different.
Right.
You know, she didn't, obviously, Tennant, she didn't tell you look different. So.
Yeah, it was just.
It was fun to see. The
end
was
great. And I think, as far as, like, Moffat, like, storytelling
goes,
like, the end was, it's definitely a high point for him.
But it wasn't a caper like you would expect with River Song. Because it was only an hour long. Mm-hmm. And usually River Song stories were 2 hours.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, a lot of the stories with her with Matt Smith were two-parters.
Mm-hmm.
And this was just an hour.
Yeah, I feel like they could have told the caper in an hour.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, whatever. It's like you said, it's a great way to send the character off.
Yeah.
It shows a lot of respect to a fan favorite.
Yeah, I mean, I was happy with the ending. You know, it was one of those things where the episode, it's like, you know, you could hit or miss it. But the last 10 minutes, 15 minutes paid off, like, the whole song story, I guess.
So I know we don't talk about, like, sports much.
Yeah.
But this is, like, an NBA game.
Yeah.
Right? Like, if I tuned into the last 10 minutes of this episode, I'm in love with it.
Right.
You know, and it's like, okay, I can kind of, like, understand why people like River Song a little more. Just like a basketball game. You just have to tune in the last couple minutes and... You know,
that's where all the action happens in the last few minutes.
But yeah, I don't know. You're right. The Christmas ones are hit or miss. I think the problem with the Christmas episodes is they got off to such a good start.
Yeah.
From going from Eccleston to Tennant.
Yeah.
And then Tennant just kind of knocked those down. But it wasn't Moffat writing those, was it?
No, not that back was, then. That was Russell T. Davis. Yeah.
But I would love for him to come back.
Just if he came back and did, like, just a story.
Just write a couple stories.
With Capaldi, especially, because I think that would be kind of, you know, interesting to see how he would portray that character, you know? Agreed. I think it would have been difficult for him to write a Matt Smith story, but I think I could see him writing a Capaldi story.
I mean, Capaldi, like, if I had to, like, do a, like, correlation, I think Eccleston and Capaldi are...
Very similar.
Cut from the same cloth.
Yeah.
So,
But
yeah, okay. So when does Doctor Who come back? Not until the fall, right?
Not until the fall, I think, with a new companion.
And will it be Capaldi's last season?
He's saying so. But then it's like, do you believe everything you read on the internet?
Well, no.
But then Moffat's talking about it might be his last season, too. Which, you know, that's okay, because if Moffat leaves Doctor Who, then, you know, it goes to what we're going to talk about next. He's going to be doing able to do more Sherlock.
Right.
Because I think the problem with Sherlock is that he's working on Who, which you have to do the 10 to 12 episodes. And I think
the other problem with Sherlock is Benedict Cumberbatch and Martin Freeman. Popular? Well, and Martin Freeman have both quickly become two of the more popular actors in all of the world.
And now they're both going to be part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
They are.
Yeah.
So... which that's another one we'll have to do a bonus episode about. But yeah, all right. So just real quick to wrap up Doctor Who.
Yeah.
What would you like out of 5 TARDISes? What do you rate it?
I'd give it a, you know, 3.5.
3.5? Yeah. All right. Yeah. Fair enough.
I enjoyed it. Like I said, you know, it was fun. There was a lot of like the continuity drops where, you know, because she carried that diary around forever. So at a certain point, like, you know, Fleming's reading off like all their like stuff that they've mentioned before, and but it's like, you know, the doctor's just standing back behind her, like kind of grinning, like a little smirk, like well, I remember that.
That was only 2 billion years.
That's
ago,
when she really realizes that he is who he is, because she's talking about he don't love me.
Yeah,
you know, she knows that he doesn't love her, but that he cares about her.
Right,
and that, and she's talking about it, and all of a sudden when she looks at him and he says hello, sweetie, I'm like, that's payoff right there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Great. Okay.
But so yeah, definitely a good episode.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there's much like Christmas episodes. My favorites probably are like, you know, the first David Tennant one.
It's a fighting
the
hand.
The Clara Oswald one was probably one of my favorites. But then there's characters that I love.
Well, the Donna Noble Christmas one.
Oh, yeah.
Was
yeah.
probably my favorite because
The Donna, Runaway Bride?
Yeah, is my favorite companion of all time. So.
Yeah, so I mean, yeah, this one's probably in my top five Doctor Who Christmas episodes.
Cool.
Not that there's been that many, but, you know.
What are we on, eight?
Yeah, maybe 8 or 9 years now.
So. So you'll put it in about the top half.
Yeah, it's in the top half. Right, yeah,
cool.
Yeah.
All right, so let's move on to Sherlock.
Yes.
The Abominable Bride.
Yay!
Woo, I said it right!
Okay, damn. One little trivia thing about this episode and the Doctor Who episode. Directed by the same guy.
Interesting.
Yeah, Douglas MacKinnon.
Cool.
And I was like, well, that's really weird that they had him directing both the specials.
So what else has Douglas MacKinnon done?
I'm not really sure. I didn't have enough room on all the paper for all that.
Yeah.
I'm sure you can look him up on IMDb. He's probably done a lot of Sherlock and Doctor Who episodes. I'm sure, yeah.
He's probably done like Holyoaks. This episode is
written by Mark Gatiss and Stephen Moffat. Mm-hmm. Obviously, you know, the creators of the show.
So I'm going to say this. Just getting into Sherlock. I came really late to the Sherlock game.
Did you?
Like
how far? How long like was it before the show?
The start of when season 3 started and the second episode came out is when I watched the first episode of Sherlock on Netflix. Okay.
And I had bought the first and second seasons a year before the third season. And you had
told me to watch the show.
Yeah, I thought it was really well done cuz obviously, you know, I've read a good amount of Sherlock. I couldn't tell you much about what I've read because it's been years. Yeah,
I mean, it's been years. I mean, a little kid. But.
You know, and obviously a lot of people say The Hound of the Baskervilles is probably my favorite Sherlock story.
Yeah.
And that was one where, and it's funny because my grandma used to do the Reader's Digest books. Like she would do the subscriptions and she would give me stuff.
Yeah.
And that was one of the first ones I remember her giving me. And it's you know, reading that. And I think it was A Study in Scarlet was the other one in that book. And it was like, The Hound of the Baskervilles kind of scared the crap out of me as a kid.
Yeah. I mean, the episode kind of scared the crap out of me as an adult.
Well, yeah, like, this episode is the way that they adapted it.
So, but I'll say this. So, with Sherlock, I came into it with a very Doctor Who mindset already.
Because of who the creators were.
Yeah, and it felt very Whovian to me.
To you.
Now, I watched the first two episodes and I was like, okay, I like this, but there's other stuff I want to watch. So when season 3 had ended, because I mean, there are only 3 episodes anyway.
Yeah.
It's probably like a month.
Like movies, pretty much. Yeah. Like 3 movies and then a season.
So it was like probably like 2 or 3 months after that ended that I was like, okay, I'm gonna in earnest sit down and watch this.
Like, okay.
So kind of like I did with Breaking Bad. It's like, I'm just going to power through. The second viewing of the pilot, whatever, the first episode, I fell in love with it. And it's like, okay.
The Taxi Driver.
I get it. Yeah, I get it now.
The Study in Pink, I think is what it was called.
Yeah, that's what it's called.
Yeah.
I've really enjoyed Martin Freeman through the years and things. Like, you know, he was in the, you know, I loved him in Hot Fuzz. Just in the minor role he had. He's great in The World's End.
Love Actually.
Yeah, Love Actually.
Yeah.
So, and obviously from The Office.
Yeah, yeah. So, you have. I see. I've never watched that version of The Office. So,
which I watched. You know, I mean, I watched the British version before I watched the American version.
And, shame on me. I haven't watched it yet.
And I was like, I was hesitant about the American version because I'm not a big Steve Carell fan, and I never have.
Oh, okay.
Like I didn't like him on The Daily Show. And
now, which character did he play in comparison to
Jim?
Oh,
character.
Was he?
Yeah, Tim.
Martin Freeman was the Jim Halpert.
So, in Love Actually, the woman he's like with, the Pam.
Oh, so, okay.
Yeah.
See, now I'll probably have to. I think that's on Netflix, so I'll probably have to watch it.
Okay, so the first episode is really important here because in The Abominable Bride, we get the retelling almost.
The retelling of the meeting?
Of the meeting.
Yeah.
In 1889. Whoa,
and did you watch it? Did you get a screener or did you?
Like... No, I watched it on PBS or whatever it's on.
Oh, okay. Okay, so did it have the, like, on the airing of it on TV? Like, on PBS, on television?
Oh, no, I bought it off iTunes.
Okay. On the PBS version, it had the previously on.
Oh, cool.
So it showed the whole scene of them meeting, like, you know, of that first part. And then it starts out and it again. And it's literally, like, you're watching it parallel because you just watched it, and then you're watching it again, and you're like, holy crap, it's really like literally almost the same scene.
Mm-hmm. And he was back from the war.
Yeah.
He's got
Which, know. I mean, you know, obviously was in the, you know, Conan Doyle books.
Right.
You know, Dr. Watson had been a doctor in the Afghan War.
Mm-hmm.
You know, funny how there's always an Afghan War.
Yeah, no kidding.
And had come back and was looking for lodging. And, you know, obviously Sherlock was looking for a flatmate.
Yeah.
And that. I really liked, because obviously it's a modern story. So Benedict Cumberbatch plays it modern.
Uh-huh.
I really liked that he was able to step into the
old-timey
old-time role. Version. You know, it felt like, Nigel Rathbone?
Yep.
It felt like those old movies.
Yeah, both of them.
Yeah, literally it was both like...
Both of them. Like, it's like
everybody fit right into time their characters. And, yeah.
No, it was...
Lestrade was awesome.
I have to say, like, and, you know, spoilers, obviously, because, like, there's no reason to talk about this. And
yeah, I think it airs one more time next week on PBS.
Yeah. Yeah.
The 10th. I think January the 10th, they're going to re-air it again.
Yeah.
So, you know, they really do a good job with, like, with PBS doing it. I mean, obviously, I bought the first two seasons on Blu-ray and watched them. But, like, PBS is doing a really good job of... you know, taking care of this like they do their other shows. Like I said, Downton Abbey is...
Yeah, I mean, they get to Netflix really fast. Oh, we watched the first episode of that, by the way.
Oh, did you? Yeah.
Thumbs up.
I told you. But, you know...
Yeah, no. So, you know, correlation of the first episode.
Yeah.
Going back in time. It was really, really cool. Where I kind of, like, lost it on this episode a little bit is around the middle.
Okay.
And before, like... Before he wakes up and he's on
the... You mean before he's meditating?
Yeah.
And then Moriarty shows up?
When he's meditating and Moriarty shows up, that's where I'm just... Like, I want to say probably from...
It was literally one of those things where, like, in the episode you were watching it and you're like, okay, this is just a publicity stunt by the guys, you know, for us to watch it.
Yeah, and that's what I was thinking. So
yeah.
I want to say from probably minute 30... to minute maybe 43, so like that 13 minutes, like middle of the second act.
Yeah,
I was like, why am I still watching this?
Yeah,
like a couple times, and you know,
I could see, you know, the whole that point of it, but there was like clues throughout there,
and so when you get to the point where Moriarty shows up, kind of like the fifth season of Breaking Bad, the first season all of a sudden made sense.
Yeah,
you know, the middle of the second act.
Yeah.
All of a sudden made
sense. And it's cool because when he's talking to Moriarty and Moriarty is like, you know, bragging about things and the room starts shaking.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and you're kind of like, what's going on? And it's like, if you didn't watch the last episode of the third season and you just jumped into this one, you wouldn't know that he's on a jet.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I'm sitting there going, oh, he's going through turbulence.
Yeah.
Like, I was like, oh, this is all a dream. You know, kind of like, I think probably 20 minutes in, I'm like, okay, he's dreaming this. Yeah. Like, he's asleep on the plane and dreaming this. I, you know, because the Mind Palace thing is one of those things where it's either he's awake or he's asleep and he can be in the Mind Palace.
Right.
And literally, when he's like, you know, Moriarty's like, watch that touchdown. And the plane hits. I mean, it literally, like, flips to the plane hitting the ground.
Yeah.
And landing. Like... And he, like, it shows him waking up and everybody comes on the plane. And it's like...
Hey, remember that kid that cosplayed as Sherlock
at the
thing? And he was walking around with his fingers steepled around his mouth and everything. What was it? What was I calling it? His mind sandbox? Whatever I was calling it.
Yeah, you were calling it
his mind playpen.
His mind playground?
No, playpen.
Playpen, that's so, it.
Because the kid was not sharp.
Yeah.
Well,
in the second year, he had a John Watson with him.
No, he had John Watson both times.
Did he? Yeah. I totally missed him. So.
It must
have been the steepled fingers.
I can't not make fun of that kid when I see him, which is horrible to say. But
yeah,
if you were anywhere in the vicinity, you know what I'm talking about. But no,
that was at the expo, right?
Yeah, the expo. When the plane hits and he jostles up, I was like,
yeah,
because, you know, I mean, I'll be honest, the first time, because I watched it twice. The first time I watched it, I probably wasn't paying as close attention because, again, it was like 1:30 in the morning,
right? Yeah. But, you need to watch these things a little earlier.
Earlier.
That's okay. I fell asleep on the first watch of it.
Yeah, well, actually, that happens. I've been watching Happy Endings on Hulu earlier, so.
Yeah.
Just marathoning through that, and then I'll be back into the Amazon show hole again.
The show hole.
Why even have a TV? That's my favorite line in that whole commercial. No, so the end, the questioning of Moriarty. The Moriarty questioning of Sherlock, sorry.
What do you mean? At the waterfalls? Or?
At the waterfall. The how do I still exist?
Well, the whole thing where like he's solving the case, it's in his mind palace of this murder that happened, that they legitimately know happened.
Mm-hmm.
And when it gets to the basement scene with him with all the women and that, and you know, everybody showing up that was in the episode, and he suspects that it was, what is it? Lady Carmichael.
Right.
Was the killer. She comes out, or so you think, pulls the hood back, and it's Moriarty again.
Mm-hmm.
And you realize again that, you know, his brain's screwing with him. He's... Like, he's literally got a piece of Moriarty in his head, is what it is. Because that's how he's figuring out how to defeat Moriarty, mm-hmm. I pretty much would say it. And then he shows up on the waterfalls. So he wakes up again.
Yeah, he wakes up again, and that's where they're like, you're on cocaine.
Yeah, and you know, hey, and Pablo, let's Escobar. Go to the, what was it? Let's go to the graveyard and all that stuff happened. It's really, like, weird because they dig up the corpse, and the corpse goes, do not forget me. You hear, like, this voice, and you're like, wait a minute, he didn't wake up. He's not awake.
Yeah.
And literally the corpse falls on him, and he wakes up again, and back he's at Rickenbach Falls, where... Sherlock and Moriarty, you know, died, quote unquote, because eventually they both come back in some form or another.
Right.
And, you know, Moriarty pretty much beats the crap out of him.
Love that scene. I loved everything. Like, the last 20 minutes of the episode.
Yeah.
I love every bit of it.
And you think he's going to kill him.
Yeah.
You think he's going to kill him. And then you hear John cock his gun. And Moriarty's like, there's two of you? And it's the first time that Sherlock's ever called Watson John.
John.
Yeah.
It's in his mind palace.
Yeah.
And he's like, well, is it? You know?
Yeah.
And then when Watson just kind of gingerly pushes him over with
foot. Like, yeah, just like gives Moriarty a little shove.
Just a nudge.
And then Sherlock realizes, I have to jump off to wake up, pretty much. And, you know... He jumps, he dives, and he wakes up on the plane.
Yeah. Well, first he throws the hat. And
then But, you know, the hat's always going to be there. No matter how much, you know, the modern Sherlock tries to avoid that hat, it's still showing up every episode.
Yes.
So, he wakes up on the plane, and Mycroft pretty much tells Watson to look after him. You know, because it's going to be dark times coming ahead.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny because... Sherlock leaves his notebook there. Mycroft picks it up, and there's the word Redbeard, which I don't have any clue. You know, I'd have to go look into
Sherlock at that. Sea, arg, matey.
Right. So the cool thing is the episode ends with him back in his mind palace again, talking to Watson in the flat, and he gets up, and he looks out, and it's modern day. And I was like, that was cool.
The cut, the way that just cut.
Yeah, together. Yeah. Literally, like, the way it...
Because they panned kind of over his shoulder and out the window. So you got to see that Victorian room, which was the sets.
Oh, yeah.
The 1880, 90s, whatever. Well, it's
literally
sets.
The same set. They just came in and changed everything out and made it look like, you know, all the trophies are there.
I'm just saying, like, the Victorian versions of the sets were amazing.
And everybody being able to jump into Victorian versions of the characters. And, I mean, you know, the clothing was different. And, the you know, their accents were a little different.
The facial hair was different. Yeah. The hair. It was,
but it was still cool that everybody was in the episode. I mean, you know, literally every character that's been on the modern Sherlock, you know, some of them were created for the modern Sherlock. Right. They all were in that story.
Mm-hmm.
And it was fun. I really enjoyed it. I can't wait for them to come back with a season.
Hopefully, do we know when it is?
It'll probably be the end of this year, I'm thinking. I hope that, like, you know, I think Cumberbatch is done filming Doctor Strange, or almost done filming Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
And I think it would be a perfect, like, ending to the year. You know, Doctor Strange, people will know who he is that don't know who he is, and watch Sherlock.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think
if like, they did one a year like they like this,
yeah,
that would be fine too.
Just 1 2-hour episode, yeah. Or even 90-minute yeah. episode every year,
right?
Like the show would go on for, you know, yeah. as long as the two of them want to do it.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, it's one of those things where I should have went to the theater and seen it because
yeah, I kind of was regretting Fathom was that playing too. It
this past week, and I'm like, oh, I didn't go. You know, that little thing called work gets in the way sometimes.
Work.
But yeah, it was a good time, and you know, I honestly enjoy Stephen Moffat's writing on this than on Doctor Who.
Well, I think because his writing and just maybe his thinking process, because I don't obviously know him,
yeah.
is more grounded in real life. And like as fantastical as the Doctor is, I think that's a hard show to get right.
Yeah.
Like Aquaman. Aquaman's an easy character to get wrong.
Yeah.
He's really hard to get right.
Right.
And I feel like for Moffat, just Moffat in general, Doctor Who is really hard for him.
Yeah. If you go back and look at some of the old episodes, you could tell other writers had problems mm-hmm. with that. It's the same as Star Trek. I mean, it's one of those things where you really have to put... There were a lot of problems
with the Eccleston episodes.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? Like, not everyone is a great...
Yeah,
like,
and I mean, there's a book out there where it's Russell T. Davies' pretty much daily log of working on the series.
Stardate.
And 4423 literally is like emails between him and the guy who was the editor of Doctor Who magazine at the time.
Mm.
So it's a lot of just, you know, going back and forth emails, talking about writing process.
So like that Hunter S. Thompson book of letters that I have.
It might,
like,
yeah. It like might, yeah.
Emails instead of letters.
It was really interesting because you got to see the process of episodes. And I would like to see a Moffat version of this book to see what he dealt with. Because, you know, coming on to a show after it being popular with a head writer,
mm-hmm.
you know, and being popular with a actor. And having to deal with the drama of that alone, I would like to see it. And it's not one of those things where it's like, I want to see all the backroom garbage. I just want to see him talking just about his process.
Yeah.
Because Russell T. Davies had an interesting way of dealing with the process mm-hmm. of writing sometimes. And he would refer back to other shows he had worked on.
Well, and he had a completely different like set of challenges. Because the show had been off the air for, what, 10 years?
Right, yeah. Yeah, it had been, I think it had been 10 years. Yeah.
So, I mean, in 2005, he brought a show back that no one was really asking for.
Right. And it's the same as Star Trek. Nobody was asking for Star Trek The Next Generation. They just wanted to do it.
Yeah.
You know,
but then to take a show that no one was asking for, but then modernize it. It's funny that the parallels
of those two shows are, like, really there.
So, which, I mean, it's interesting, like, talking about it in this year and this podcast and, you know, it's... You know, again, like even this one, there's parallels. Like the Hounds of Baskerville episode of Sherlock is a very Doctor Who-esque, you know, type of a story.
Yeah, you could pop the Doctor into that story and do it on another planet and it would still work.
You can pop the Doctor in and do it on Earth and, and put UNIT in there instead of the scientists. But yeah, all right, so we haven't talked about comics in a long time.
Yeah.
It's been a while.
I haven't read a lot of comics in a long time.
So I've been
2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah, I've been getting caught up. So Marvel did Star a weird Wars. Thing.
Sorry, I have been reading Vader Down. Sorry, I'm yawning. Vader Down.
Are we boring you, Johnny?
No, not at all. You know, I worked this morning, so. Secret Wars, catching up on Secret Wars because I fell behind and I'm missing an issue somewhere or another.
Which one are you missing?
Number 7. It's there. It's at home.
Oh, okay.
But I can't find it.
I was going to say, it's in a box.
Oh, yeah. I'll have to dig it. Obviously, Christmas got the house a little crowded.
Christmas got the best of you, huh?
Yeah, well, it did, you know. But, you know, lots of good stuff out. New Obi-Wan and Anakin miniseries started.
And so that's 6 issues?
I think it's 5. I think they're going to stick to a 5-issue arc on miniseries.
So I'm really excited about this book because we're getting to see Anakin at a time that we haven't seen at all.
Yeah.
It's, you know, pre-Attack of the Clones, post-Phantom
Menace.
I was trying to think of, like, a derogatory way to say that, but Phantom Menace is enough. You can say
the Phantom Menace.
Yeah.
The Phantom Awakens. But, the Force Menace.
The Force Menace. I love it. Yeah, so, you know, it's that time where we're going to see a lot of, well, hopefully, we're going to see a lot of mistakes Obi-Wan makes early on.
All right, yeah. I think this is a story that takes place, you know, probably his first or second year in as a Padawan.
Anakin, yeah.
Yeah, Anakin.
With Obi-Wan's first or second year in as a knight.
As a master.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he wasn't a master.
Well, he's Luke. Yeah. I mean, Luke, Anakin's master.
Right. Oh, yeah. So, yeah, he's a knight with his... Yeah. Is Anakin his first Padawan?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. First well, yeah. And he, I mean, literally at the end of Phantom Menace, he, the, like, Anakin, or Obi-Wan hadn't gone through the trials.
Right.
So yeah, it's like, you know.
Well, I mean, he did with Maul.
By fighting Maul, yeah. By fighting a Sith and actually beating him, he passed the trials. Yeah.
By cutting a Sith in half.
Yeah.
Making Sith kebabs.
So, yeah, that came out, what, the last part of Chewbacca came out.
Yeah.
So, which last I week, yet, I think.
So, number 5.
Yeah, I waited until they were all out, and I'm going to read them all at once now.
Again, beautiful, beautiful book.
Oh, it's a Phil Noto.
Phil Noto's art is amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, he does the covers for the Star Wars Journey to Force Awakens and, you know, what happened right before Force Awakens. Yep. And it's just, they're awesome looking covers.
So, but yeah, okay, so this week, you're back to your mainstay of books here.
Where, yeah, it was a big week.
Last week I had more books than you for the first time in a long time. Yeah. So
Vader's out this week.
And this is the conclusion of Vader Day?
No, next... I think this isn't the conclusion, I don't think.
And I'll have a Star Wars book handy.
I think this was part 5, and it's a 6-part story.
Oh, it
story.
Ends in Star Wars. It doesn't end in Darth
no,
Vader.
No, I thought it ended in another Vader Down. I thought it was Vader Down 2. It was maybe okay, maybe we'll it see. Does end so, in Star Wars.
So Vader Down is coming to a close.
Right.
It's unbelievable. It is so good. And not just the Darth Vader stuff, but Dr. Aphra and, you know, BT and Triple Zero.
Pretty much like everybody that they built over the last year. I mean, everything that...
it's been a tremendous
payoff. Jason Aaron built up has been awesome. I hope that they do this every year. I hope that they do like a big event. Arcing story. It doesn't have to focus on Vader.
No, you know. So, just don't focus on Boba Fett. Just please do not focus on Boba Fett.
I was going to say a bounty hunter focused story, but not Boba Fett.
Don't focus
on
Boba
Fett. Have him in the story.
What's the droid?
IG-88.
IG-88. Let's see an IG-88 story. Yeah,
Dengar.
Boss. Yeah. So,
I mean, especially since Dengar showed up, and you know, him and Chewbacca had a straight up like brawl.
Yeah.
You know, to him coming back would be cool. Like doing some kind of bounty hunter story. You know, that ties Vader and the Star Wars books together.
I think it just kind of ties what the Empire was doing at that time.
Yeah.
Or, you know, even tie it into Lando and Bespin. And
Oh, yeah.
There is something, though, about these books is they need to quickly get to the new continuity. Like,
What do you mean? Like a mini series with
like
Force Awakens?
Like about like Force Awakens. Just in that era. Maybe not with the characters.
Do you feel like they could do... something that happens after Shattered Empire, but before Force Awakens.
I mean, they could do a BB-8 book. I mean, Chewbacca proved it.
Well, right.
They can do a book where there's, like, the main character does not have readable, quote-unquote, dialogue.
The problem you run into on that is that we don't have an Episode 8, so you can't really do anything Episode 7
saying, like,
and Episode 8.
In between.
Well, right. Jedi that's where you do a Shattered, you do a second Shattered Empire story where Poe Dameron's a kid and gets BB-8.
Yeah.
And, you know, they get lost in the woods. And just do a story
from that point.
Why did? How did he become a?
They get trapped in space. He steals a spaceship. He has BB-8. They're on a like retired clone medical station.
Right. Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Like let's just steal
you're
that
just,
from.
You're
Rebels.
Wanting to tie Rebels into this again?
So, no, I'm saying like just stealing it.
You just anyway. Keep trying to shoehorn Rebels into the Force Awakens.
Right. So, Spider-Man 2099 number 5 comes out this week. Are you caught up on that yet?
No. No.
This is.
I read
been...
the first and second issues and.
So pre all new all different. I felt like Miguel O'Hara was that like. It was a really strong book.
Yeah.
This is taking it to another
level. Okay.
This is my favorite arc of Spider-Man 2099, probably since they introduced him.
Okay.
So, it's been really, really good.
Some of these books on my list, obviously, I wait, you know, and let them build up. Like, Contest of Champions, I read the first issue, but I haven't read anything since then.
I have the first issue. I haven't read it yet.
Yeah, I've tried to build them up a little bit, and you're still getting Archie.
Yeah, that book's good.
Are you actually, you're still
enjoying
it?
Yeah, I'm okay. Like...
Now, is Mark Waid still writing it?
Yeah, Mark Waid is still writing it.
But it's not Fiona Staples, right?
What's her first name? Her last name is Fish. Like Samantha Fish or something.
Oh,
like
really?
That.
P-H-I-S-H? Or
no,
actually spelled like Fish?
Yeah. Beautiful still. Beautiful art.
Okay.
You know, very much like... like obviously a new writer or a new artist, but like very similar styles to Fiona Staples. Okay. You know, the Doctor Strange book has been really good. Invincible Iron Man has been great.
Okay.
Nova, when it gets collected, you got to pick that one.
Yeah, and that's going to be what happens with Invincible Iron Man too.
Because Sam, and his dad is a corpsman as
Richard,
well.
Richard Rider's back.
No, it's not Richard Rider though.
Who is it? Who's his dad?
Maybe it is Richard Rider. I don't know. But like his dad has an older Nova Corps helmet that doesn't quite work all the time.
Oh, okay.
And like he's keeping a secret from Sam. So, you know, it's...
I am not your father.
Well, I mean, it could be very well where they're going. Uncanny X-Men number one kicked off. Haven't read it yet. Or it comes out this week. Came out yesterday.
Yeah. Right? Have you picked your books up yet?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I didn't get my books this week. Yeah, these are from yesterday.
Yeah.
I forgot what day it was.
It is Thursday. The day that we normally record Infamous Podcast.
So then Batman and Robin Eternal. Remember when I said, hey, I'm only going to get the first couple of issues?
Yeah, you're knee-deep into it at this point.
I'm so into the story. Yeah. Like, it feels good. It's like, I feel like I'm at home, like, with DC again. Like, it's a well-written story. It's incorporating the Bat family in a way that they haven't been incorporated in the New 52.
Right.
But
it's just going to be in that story.
It is. It's contained within that story. But again, you're missing... Where it's like failing and where it's missing is you don't have the history that you need to have to believe that there have been 5 Robins in 7 years.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
That was one of those ones where you can't suspend the belief or disbelief.
Like in the book, you know, not to spoil it, but like Batman is not happy with Dick. Grayson.
No, I was going to say, can you end that sentence, please?
He's not happy with Dick Grayson as Robin. And, you know, he doesn't feel like he's progressing quick enough, which is not the Dick Grayson that we know. Like,
so it's a flash. This is doing some flashback storytelling.
It flashes back between the first time Batman and Robin are taking on the Scarecrow.
So it's literally like Justice League number one ended. That's the beginning of that New 52 history.
Yeah. So this is like... Batman Robin Year Zero type of a thing.
Okay.
So,
read that crap either.
He's been Robin for a
little
sorry, bit.
I'm sorry, but.
Wait, did they do a Batman and Robin Year Zero?
They did Batman Year Zero.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I didn't read that.
But, I mean, it's one of those.
So it would be like year one. Then,
yeah.
So.
It's just one of those things where, and, you know, I'm sorry to say it, but DC's books, DC main flagship title, you know, their books are just crap lately. Well, like, Vertigo, on the other hand, you know.
All these new books, that Unfollow book is good.
Yeah, I've read a few of the new Vertigo books, and, you know, I'm like, yeah, these are great. But, I mean, you know, and some of them are miniseries, but that's the way Vertigo works.
Yeah.
The thing is DC should look at the model that Vertigo does and maybe follow that sometimes.
I agree.
And they probably should just destroy the New 52 universe.
Yeah,
and reintroduce a different universe, a multiverse.
A multiverse where you can still visit the PU 52.
And maybe put Grant Morrison in charge.
Continuity. What?
Yeah.
Why would you put Grant Morrison
in charge?
What?
But,
no.
I mean,
Jim Lee and Dan DiDio are just fine
because, and that's what I'm saying is, if you were willing to give them a chance, and they've kind of failed.
They have.
I mean... People
they have failed.
Here's the thing. Working in comic book store and seeing this over the period of years, people will still buy the books.
Yeah.
I still buy Green Lantern because I collect Green Lantern. I haven't read Green Lantern since Relic was introduced.
I think that's when I stopped too.
Yeah. And it's one of those things where it was just, you know, you lost me at a certain point with the story because I'm like, Geoff Johns did such a good job that it was one of those things where, you know, filling those shoes.
From Rebirth?
Yeah.
All the way to whenever he left the book in the New 52.
Yeah.
Is the best run on Green Lantern ever.
Yeah.
Ever.
Like full, like more than a year run.
Yeah.
You know, 5-year run, I think it was. 5 or 6 years.
Yeah.
But it's like...
Like, I liked Ron Marr's run on Green Lantern with Kyle.
Yeah.
It doesn't hold a candle to Geoff Johns.
Right.
And, like, it wasn't all gold. Like, you know,
there's a lot of...
He has a hard time getting out of storylines and into new storylines.
Right.
You know, the White Lantern stuff was kind of a train wreck.
But setting up, you know, a lot of awesome stories and having a miniseries that blew it out of the water. And then having another miniseries that blew it out of the water. I mean, the Sinestro Corps War and then Blackest Night.
Yeah, I mean...
And then it was like, you know, somebody at DC just said, nah, that stuff, screw it.
Well, Green Lantern didn't reboot either with the New 52, really.
It did, and I think that's where it lost me, is because it's like one of those things where, you know, as much good stuff as there was, Geoff Johns wrote an ending to his book.
Yeah.
He wrote an ending to the book that he wrote called Green Lantern, because it literally says, this is what happened to this character. Mm-hmm. This is where this character went.
Yeah, it was like the old 80s movie where it's like, John Stewart became a senator in the United States Senate, and he married blah, blah, blah. And Guy Gardner,
and it's one of those things where
Alcoholics Anonymous.
That's where I say the multiverse comes in to play, as you know, you can... Man, multiverse is a great MacGuffin to use.
Yeah.
Because then you can just do a story and say, well, that happened on Earth 75.
Yeah.
You know, sorry, I jumped, you know, sorry, there's only 52 of those Earths, but, you know.
They don't all have to be 1 through 52.
There's, you know, it happened on Earth S, you know. And that's one of those things where
Earth Pie.
Saying that Grant Morrison take over.
Yeah.
Because he knows the multiverse.
And
if you read the Multiversity books,
and I
mean,
read a couple of them, and I really enjoyed them.
Dude has a really good idea of what to do with that.
But when you're saying he's in charge, he's not writing 10 books.
No.
He's the editorial steward of the line.
He's like, you know, it's one of those things where, and because he's done it, come in and said, I've got an idea, and this is what I want to do. And DC, because they know that Grant Morrison's kind of gold with storylines and writing stories, will just go, okay, you go ahead and do that. But this is our regular continuity here.
So the way I look at this right now is I'm going to get really nerdy for a second.
Sure.
Like, thinking of, like, Lord of the Rings, right?
Mm-hmm.
He's like Aragorn. He should be the king of the universe.
Okay.
And Dan Didio is like Faramir's dad.
Oh, wow. You're going to throw Denethor down on the... You want Dan Diodato to be gasoline poured all over him and jump off of the building?
I want him to be on fire, falling off a cliff.
So is Jim Lee Faramir?
Boromir.
Oh, wow.
Because he's Geoff just Jones a disappointment Faramir? To everybody. Yeah. I mean,
you know, This got really weird.
It got really nerdy, but, you know, but no, I mean, you understand what I'm saying.
Like, yeah, they, I understand they what have, you're saying.
They have pissed off so much talent.
Yeah.
And they have made a mess of the, like, I don't even know about Superman. You know, is he Clark Kent? Is he not? He doesn't have powers. He's not bulletproof. He can't fly.
Oh, my head hurts already.
But then there's one where he is all powerful. He can fly.
Well, and then here's the best part of it now, because convergence happened.
Yeah.
There's more than one Superman running around in the universe, because there's the post or the pre-convergence Superman who's been there the whole time. Been there since Justice League 1.
Yeah.
I read that issue, and he was shoehorned in there. He watched the fight happen with Darkseid.
Okay.
And he just didn't get involved.
He just sat.
He
sat
literally,
on like a park bench.
He's literally hiding
sandwich,
because him and Lois are from the... another universe.
Okay.
You know, they escaped that whole end of convergence thing, came into the as you call it, the PU-52.
Right.
She's pregnant. They're trying to hide because they have a son.
Sure.
But he's still doing heroics. So people are going, we've seen this blur. We've seen this
do you think
black gray blur.
Do you think they heard me roll my eyes?
Yeah, probably. Yeah. But I mean, really,
red,
it's like
blur.
It's like, okay, so you're doing it now. You're starting to throw multiversity into this, but you're still just shoehorning it into the PU-52.
Like, if you want to shoehorn it in anything, go back and create a new continuity that just encompasses it all as your multiverse.
Yeah,
and that is the continuity.
Yeah.
The multiverse is the continuity.
Right,
and
yeah.
Let the writer, because, you know, they're not all bad writers. I mean, a lot of the guys they have on the books right now,
it's
just
not
such
bad writers,
editorial.
Bad editorial. Yeah.
Anyway,
it's literally bad editorial.
I really don't want to complain this much. it hurts.
Happy New Year!
It's like mommy Well, it's just, like mommy just reached across. It's one of those things where
when you have love for a universe, and you know, people who've come in said, "Yeah, we love it. We love this. We love these characters," and then they trample on them.
Yeah,
it's like you. The legacy of Superman, the legacy of Batman, the legacy of Wonder Woman,
Robin,
the legacy of all these characters, you have pretty much trampled on when you could have kept the regular DC universe and then brought back the multiverse as they were planning to do with another Grant Morrison story, Final Crisis, bring the multiverse back and do quality stories.
Yeah. All right, so
the quality stories are in the trade paperbacks you go and buy of the original, you know, the stuff that, you know, and I love some of these guys. They're still around. They still work for DC, but, you know, they're the same as me. We get paid a paycheck. Mm-hmm. We'll tow the company line.
Right.
And
you are a company man, if anything.
Well, yeah, you have to be a company man at a certain point. But the thing about it is, you know, Dan Jurgens, when he worked on Superman, when Louise Simonson worked on Superman, when they all were like, and you know, Superman back in the 90s had the diamond, so you knew the continuity of each issue. So there was like this, you know, beginning this month, one, two, three, four. So you're following the continuity. And it would start from the beginning of the year to the end of the year.
Right.
And you would know this book fits into the story this way. Now, you don't know where a book fits in.
Right.
So, it hurts.
Yeah.
It hurts my feelings. It really does. It hurts my feelings because I don't want to be negative to DC. But, you know, focus on your comic book company and let your movie company do what they're going to do with the characters that they own. They own the comic books. They own the movies. But let the comic book company do what the comic book company will do. And let the movie division do what they're going to do. Let the TV division do what they're going to do.
Yep.
And if the comic book company has tie-ins to those, that's great. But they don't tie into the regular universe.
Yeah.
You do it as a separate book.
I mean, like, looking at Marvel. Marvel is not this bastion of greatness.
No. Oh, no. I mean, you can go on the Marvel side and go, because Fantastic Four sucked, which I still haven't watched it. I did buy it.
Yeah, I know you bought it.
But I still haven't watched it.
I don't blame
Fantastic Four sucked. So they're pretty much booted the Fantastic Four out.
They're gone.
You know, what? There's a Guardian of the Galaxy and a... an X-Men now, right?
Inhuman.
But, right, yeah. They're all part of this thing. They're trying to dilute the X-Men because 20th Century Fox. You know, they want... And it's the whole thing.
And I tell you what, though. The dilution of the X-Men has been, like, in just a few issues, been really interesting storytelling.
Well, sure.
Because they have good... They have a good vision from on high.
Well, and I think that, you know, that one's not going to hurt them as much. But for Fantastic Four fans, it's the same as with DC. You kind of trample on it because...
So, talked to Brandon Montclair, right?
Yeah.
Who co-writes Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur,
Devil Dinosaur.
Lunella?
Yeah.
Is the key to reigniting the mutant race.
Right.
I'm sorry. It's just from how he's talked and from what the character has done in the first two issues of that book.
Okay.
She doesn't want to be an Inhuman.
Right.
Right? Well, she's going to figure out how to unsterilize all the mutants.
Right.
Whenever they decide
that
that's what they want
to
do.
You know, it's one of those things where my thing about it is...
But they have that, like, in... I don't know if it's foresight or if, like, this is something that, you know, Brandon and Amy sat down with, you know, editorial and said, hey, we have this new character. Let's make her a linchpin.
Right.
Like, I don't know if that happened. But, like, reading it, it's very obvious that that's who that character can be.
Yeah, she could bring
DC
back the
X-Men. DC doesn't have anything like that. They have zero direction for the future. It's like, hey, DC, what's your five-year plan? More of the same garbage.
More of the same stuff.
Really, really dark superhero movies.
Whereas Marvel, at least, you know, the fall of the X-Men, quote-unquote, is happening. I mean, you know.
I mean, it's been happening for a while.
It's been happening for a while. But you're not... really trampling on anybody. You're not trampling on, like, the fans as much. Fantastic Four, they have to, in a way, because
I think the Fantastic Four at this point is Old Yeller. You just gotta take him out in the field.
Take him out and
just
shoot it.
Shotgun blast to the back.
Yeah, and I'm sure we'll see Reed and Sue soon enough. But, you know...
And if we don't, nobody misses them.
Right.
I'm sorry, but, like...
If you're gonna do a Fantastic Four book at this point, if you bring back Reed and Sue, maybe not put Johnny and the Thing in there now because they've been
It be Franklin and Valeria.
Well, yeah, that's fine, but I say bring in like the Totally Awesome Hawk maybe as a
I'm excited powerhouse. To read the second issue of that book.
But I mean, you need a powerhouse in the Fantastic Four.
And it would be interesting to have someone with a high intellect working with
Reed, right.
Who's also the, you know, the muscle.
Right. And so, you know, I think that bringing in, not Spider-Man.
No.
We don't need a Spider-Man in another book. But bringing in somebody else as a fourth member that you would never expect.
Yeah.
Like, it would be cool if they, I mean, there was the old Fantastic Four story where it was Ghost Rider, Wolverine. Yeah. You know, Spider-Man and Greyhawk.
Right.
At that point, they brought Totally Awesome Hawk and Ghost Rider in. That'd be kind of cool.
That would be cool.
Yeah, because what, Ghost Rider's a teenage boy now, I think.
Yeah, it's Amadeus Cho.
The Hawk. Sorry. But I think I think the same thing's going Ghost on with Rider, Ghost Rider, where it's either an early 20s or teenage.
So as
he drives a car.
Yeah, as the Secret War starts hitting trades.
Yeah,
I'm totally going back and getting the Ghost Rider.
Ghost Riders.
Because the stuff I leafed through in the store.
Oh yeah, it looks sweet.
Was great, and I'm not a Ghost Rider fan.
Yeah,
like I never really have been. So.
I haven't finished all Battle World stuff and that. So
yeah, the Battle World.
You know, I'm just babbling on about this, but I'm like, you know, mixing it up is what brings me into stories.
Yeah.
Mixing, you know, and that's the thing, like, you know, when New 52 started, I think I did buy all 52 number ones.
I have 48 of the 52.
See, I think I have all 52 of them. And it was one of those things where I want to see where we're going to go with this.
I didn't get OMAC.
And you didn't have to.
I didn't get Mr. Terrific.
That OMAC was one where they pissed on it right away. I mean, you know, my language.
I almost got OMAC, and I opened it up in the store.
Well, you...
And I closed it and put it
You
back
know out. I'm a Kirby fan.
I know.
And I mean, literally, trying to make the book look like Kirby.
Yeah.
And Dan DiDio writing
you
it.
Can't write.
He pissed on it right away.
I want to know, like, who he has, like, pictures of, dirt on, like, what's going on there.
Yeah.
Okay. So just to kind of close out on a high note, Paper Girls number 4 comes out.
Yep.
Have you been reading that?
Two issues behind? 3 and 4. Right. I haven't read 3 and 4.
It is an effed
up. And it's the same with Saga.
Effed up story. But like, you want to talk like pure like teen drama / sci-fi.
Yeah.
Like Brian K. Vaughan is nailing it.
Yeah.
I've been enjoying the heck out of this book. It's a mini series, just like We Stand on Guard.
That's fine, you know.
Which is, it's great.
That's fine because if Brian Vaughn's writing 3 ongoing books,
ooh,
somebody's going to get hurt.
Yeah.
And that's the whole thing, you know. And then we don't want Saga to get hurt.
Did you read the end of We Stand on Guard yet?
I haven't yet, no. I have it all, but...
It was a very interesting ending, and we'll have to talk about that at some point after you read it.
I got to catch up. Like I said, the holidays put me behind on books and that, so I got to catch up on a few things. But, you know, love the books, love stuff that's coming out. You know, obviously, we want to hear what people have to say.
Yeah, what are you guys reading?
Yeah.
Let us know.
Yeah.
Turn us on to some new books.
Facebook or...
Yeah.
You know, obviously, turning us on to new books might be a little hard because I think between the two of us, we read a lot of...
Yeah, but there's stuff we don't read.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, all right.
But, you know, that's pretty much this week's episode.
Whew.
5-star reviews on iTunes.
That'd be great. Or whatever app you use to listen to podcasts.
Keep liking my post on Instagram when I post it.
We got to start an infamous podcast.
Oh, dear Lord.
Instagram page. Anyway.
That's a lot of work.
It is a lot of work. What else was I going to say? Oh, hey, if you have questions for us, email us at theinfamouspodcast@gmail.com. And as always, you can find us at Infamous Podcast on Twitter.
Yeah.
And it's infamouspodcast.com. And just to reaffirm what Johnny said, 5-star reviews. They're awesome. They help us. We move up. We are going to plan some cool stuff for this year.
Yeah, yeah. Definitely some other things besides Star Trek.
Yeah.
But, you know.
2016 is going to be a fun year. We're going to have some guests come on and talk with us. We're going to do more interviews.
Yeah.
Not more interviews, but we're going to continue to do interviews.
Yeah.
You know, if there's someone you want us to talk to, like, let us know and we will try and make that happen.
And if you're somebody out there that wants to talk to us.
Yes. Yeah. If you
get in touch.
If you have an indie book. We'd love to check them out, and if it's something that we feel as passionately as you do about your book, we are happy to talk to you.
Jason Aaron, if you want to be on the show. I'll keep pushing that until it happens.
What's your top 3 like dream guests?
Jason Aaron would be cool because I want to talk about Star Wars.
Well, yeah.
You know, obviously he's done other stuff, but I want to talk about Star Wars with Jason Aaron. Because I want to see what, you know, where his brain's at with all this stuff.
Remember when we were at the Cincy Comic Con and I was joking that I wanted to buy like just the plain book and be like, hey, write me a story.
He would have probably wrote something on there too. But his line was so, I mean, you know, that's when he was doing Wolverine at that point.
Yes.
And yeah, his line.
And something else.
Yeah, but I think Wolverine was
the big one.
The line was the Wolverine line. Yeah. I mean, you could tell a Wolverine line. You know, no offense to Wolverine.
I just wanted to pull every single one of those people.
But Jason Aaron, writers or artists?
Either.
I mean, just George Perez would be fun.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I've met George Perez, and George Perez is a fun
He's
guy.
Really nice.
Yeah, so George Perez would be fun to talk to. I don't know who else. It's hard when you're put on the spot.
Yeah.
Actually, Brian K. Vaughn. Brian K. Vaughn would be fun.
He's
to
an
talk.
Ohio boy, so maybe we could
talk to him about Lost.
The TV show Lost?
Yeah, yeah. He worked on it, so that's true. Think it would be fun to talk to him about it.
Well, then, in that vein, we need to get Greg Grunberg on.
Now you're getting angry over there.
No,
Greg Grunberg would just make a cameo appearance on that episode.
Just in the background. He could walk by.
Yeah.
Not even say anything. Just walk by.
Who would be your, like, three?
You know, kind of like going back a little bit, I'd love to talk to Chuck Dixon.
Yeah. Yeah, Chuck would be cool. Chuck is cool. I mean, I've met Chuck before.
He's just done so much great. He did so much great stuff for the Batverse.
Yeah.
I would like to talk to Fiona Staples.
Yeah.
Just because, like...
See, now we just would have the Brian K. Vaughn Fiona Staples episode.
But, like, you know, because, like, what she does in Saga and, like, what she did in Archie.
Yeah, yeah, like, there's a difference.
It's very different. And just understanding that.
I mean, I picked up those issues just because, you know... And it's when I did a comic book thing that I usually don't do. I picked up a book just because the artist did it.
Oh, that happens.
Number three. Now you're on the spot.
Stan Humphries.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. Is that because, what was the book? Higher Earth?
Higher Earth,
yeah.
And then Star-Lord.
Yeah,
he's Star-Lord.
Star-Lord down.
I'm just a big Stan Humphries fan. I typically read. And then,
yeah, I didn't read Higher Earth.
Maybe like 3A would be Greg Rucka.
Okay.
But that's just because I have a gigantic man.
Have you ever met him?
No, I told you the story when we were at Disneyland.
Was he there?
We took the kid. He was. So we were at California Adventure, and he was at Disneyland.
Oh.
Posting pictures on Instagram by the Merida, event thing, because that was when Brave had first come out. And we were over in Radiator Springs. And I remember telling the wife, I'm like, hey, I'm going to go over to the... I'm going over to Disney.
Yeah.
Disney. I was like, I will kill you.
Yeah. Like, so I'll be back. I got to go to the bathroom.
Yeah, that's what I should have done. Just like, I'm going to go to the bathroom. You guys ride.
Yeah, yeah.
Stuff. And
he's a pretty awesome guy. I can remember, I think I've met him twice. And one time was at Wizard World Chicago.
Cool.
And I had just read the first and second Atticus.
Which I love all those books. So.
And just, you know... They have to move the line along.
They do.
But he wanted to talk.
Cool.
Like he actually wanted to talk to people about his books, and, you know, he sounds like a very interesting guy.
Nice. All right. That's the episode, because we're just going to peter out and drown out.
We're
forever.
Just battling on at this point.
Hey, guys, thanks for listening. This is episode 25, Game is Afoot, of the Infamous Podcast. I'm Brian Tudor.
Johnny Pollard.
Have a great week.